Matthew chapter 16, verse 22. Matthew 16, make it 21. It says, from that time forth began Jesus to show unto his disciples how that he must go unto Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised again the third day. Then Peter took him and began to rebuke him, saying, Be it far from thee, Lord, this shall not be unto thee. But he turned and said unto Peter, Get thee behind me, Satan, thou art an offense unto me. For thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men. You know, just that phrase, thou art an offense unto me. You are especially offensive to me. You know, it's amazing that Jesus recognized, well, there's a lot of amazing things in this passage here. It's amazing that the apostles did not remember the things that he said when he did die and when he rose again, that they could just have been completely oblivious to the fact that he had said this so many times, especially when he said it here, and we know that Peter took notice of it. That's amazing. And it's also amazing, you know, that when Peter is trying to, obviously with the best of intentions, say, No, Lord, I don't want you to die. I want you to reign. I want you to, you know, be glorious and victorious. And this is not what's going to happen to the Christ. We're going to make sure that that doesn't happen. Don't talk like that. Don't be sad. Don't be melancholy. We're going to be victorious. And that Jesus would rebuke him so strongly for having that attitude. And that fact that Jesus then would be so quick to notice temptation when it happens. You know, most of us, even if we know it's temptation, we just don't quite react the same way, you know. And that's the reason why we constantly are falling into our same old habitual besetting sins, because we do not react to temptation the way. Now, what would have happened if Eve had reacted that way? You know, when the serpent comes to her and says, hey, have you noticed this one, you know, this one tree here? And she would have said, no! He said no! And run away. That would have been better. When this is Jesus, he sees the temptation in the subtlest way comes the temptation. And he says, no! I'm not going to entertain it for a second. Not for a moment. I want God's will. And that's his reaction. All of these things are amazing. But perhaps the most amazing thing is how Satan spoke through Peter. Satan's giving this subtle temptation through the voice of Peter and through the emotions of Peter, the one that loved Jesus the most. All of these things are amazing to me. But why is it so offensive? Why does he say, Thou art an offense unto me? Not just that, look, you got it wrong. You're looking at things wrong. It's such an extreme reaction saying, No, that is horribly offensive to me. It's disgusting that you would offer that. It's offensive. Why? Part of the problem is the sneakiness of it. The deceitfulness of it. You know, you'd think that the devil being called a roaring lion and having all that power, he wouldn't have to be sneaky. But he's a sneak. He's deceitful. What's this? The king of beasts hiding in the bushes. Ready to jump out on what? The weakest. At their weakest moment. That's the way it is. That's the way he does things. It's offensive. Listen, why does it have to be so sneaky? Why do people have to disguise their intentions? And when you find out somebody has other intentions or that the truth is a little bit different than what they have made it look like, it's offensive. And after a while, you get fed up with people being sneaky with you. You're tired of people offering you free stuff when you know it's not free. You get tired of it. Surely you do. And then somebody being sneaky and trying to take something from you. And then somebody not willing to say what's on their mind. And just beat all around it and say things that they can hedge later on and say, oh, I didn't say that. I didn't mean that. No, I just... Pastors deal with it all the time. You're tired of it. Just come out and say it. I mean, if that's what you think, say it. Listen, Satan, you already tried it once. You come up to me and you offered me all the kingdom of the world once, and it didn't work. Now you got to come back sneaky. Now you got to come back and do things a different way. You got to come back and pretend behind Peter's voice that you're really on my side. Because sometimes temptation and the worst temptations come, and they act like they're in your favor. They're on your side. They're trying to help you out. And what happens when the friends, it's when your friends start drawing you away. What do you have to do? Sometimes you have to lose some friends. Sometimes you have to say, get away from me. Don't talk to me anymore. You got problems with drinking or drugs, and you got a friend that keeps telling you, now come on, it's okay, it's all right. He's not your friend. Sometimes you just got to say, never, ever offer me a drink again. And if you ever offer me a drink again, I'll no longer speak to you as a friend. Why wouldn't you say that? You have problems drinking? You got problems with drunkenness or drugs or something else like that? And some friend is one of the reasons why you keep falling back into it? Why wouldn't you say, no longer? Yeah. Don't ever offer it again. You're not my friend if you offer that to me. Right. Because he's not. Yeah, it's offensive. Sneakiness, slippery speech, underhandedness. It's offensive. But another thing is I think he's offended because of where Satan came from. You see, because Satan had been the anointed cherub that covereth. Satan had been in heaven's courts. Satan had been high and lifted up. And he had been huge and beautiful and wonderful. He had been in those councils at the beginning. He was there. He saw it all. Jesus said, I beheld Satan fall as lightning. And yet now look at Satan. Look what he's doing. Hiding in among men. Going around sneaking betrayals and temptations. How far you've fallen. Why are you against me? What did I ever do against you? You know, I see it. I've seen it happen a number of times where someone that I won to the Lord and that I taught year on year after year after year, spending afternoons, 3 or 4 hours a day, sometimes more, teaching how to understand the Bible, how to preach the gospel, how to do all these things. And then with my own hands, laid my hands on them and appointed them as elders in a church that I had built. And then some sin, something gets in, and all of a sudden I have to rebuke them. And I rebuke them, and no longer am I their friend. But they're my enemy. And they can do everything in their power to undercut me. Or to insult me. Or to lie about me to everyone else. And take as many of the church as they can. For whatever reason. It's offensive. You see, because there was a time when you knew what I knew. There was a time when we were on the same side. And now it's all different. What happened? Why do you have to betray? Don't you realize that betrayal is worse than enmity? Sure, enemies, come on. Enemies, that's fine. We can handle enemies. But what about the enemies within? What about the betrayers? What about those that sneak around behind and lie? And then slander. It's offensive. The devil wants to fight the Lord. Get his minions together and come on and fight. Don't sit there and wander around in the back talking bad about them in behind their back. Don't sit there sneaking in your little ways and being betraying and underhanded. It's offensive. But that's not why he said he was offended. I mean, it is offensive. But that's not what he said. What he said was, Get thee behind me, Satan, thou art an offense unto me, for... Why is he such an offense? Thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men. Jesus was extraordinarily offended by Satan's fascination with men and the things that be of men. Now, in case you hadn't noticed it, that's quite a degradation for Satan. I mean, why is he fascinated with men? Why does he savor the things? I understood that he was an angel, that he was higher than men. But that's what sin does to you. It degrades you. It'll take you in your highest point and drop you down till you're doing things that you cannot believe you ever would have done. It can take a college-educated man that's making a lot of money and actually have him sleeping in clothes that haven't been washed in a month, in the street, laying with his face in his own vomit. I've seen it. That's what'll happen. Sin, that's what it does. It degrades you. Sin will turn you into a beggar. Sin will turn you into having no self-esteem. It will destroy you. It brings you down. It never lifts you up. And that's exactly what happened to Satan. Satan was lifted up. And then he became kicked out and thrown down. And now he has his place among men. And he's drooling at the prospect of the things of men. He wants the things of men. He likes the things of men. And it's offensive. Especially to someone so wise as Christ. And he says, this is offensive. I can't stand the thought that you focus and are fascinated by men. And not just because he had fallen, but because of what it is. This is called humanism. And in case you didn't know it, Satan is a humanist. That's what it says. Thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men. It's humanism. It's this concept that the human race is something else. No human is really that much, but, you know, somehow collectively we can sort of imagine that the human race is something high and mighty and lifted up. It's humanism. It's a fascination with humanity. Or you might actually define humanism as devotion to the human race as an ethical alternative to religion. Always emphasizing the collective rather than the individual or partisan. Very interesting. Now, you see, because it's an alternative to religion, there are some unbelievers who are just plain outright atheistical. And they are straightforward in their atheism because atheism basically is lack of morality and just do whatever we want. They don't want to be constrained and we want to live however we want to live. And that's the straightforward atheist. The straightforward atheist wants to be free. He wants to have sex whenever he wants. He wants to get drunk whenever he wants. He wants to kill or steal or rob. He wants nobody telling him what to do. That's a straightforward one. But there's a whole bunch of unbelievers that recognize how degraded that is. And so they realize, you know, culture and education and cultivation, and there are some good things in religion, but we just don't like God. We don't like the Bible. We don't like His revelation. We don't like His rules. We want the advantage of education. We want the advantage of self-discipline. We want to think high and, you know, progress in all of this stuff, which comes through faith in God, but we don't want the God. And so they invent an alternative to religion, and they call it humanism, as if devotion to the human race makes any sense at all. Atheistic ethicalism. That's exactly what it is. It's the idea that you can be a good person without believing in God. And that basically, naturally, people are good, even if they don't believe in God. Their authority is human reason. Human reason. That's the only authority. Only what you can figure out with your brain. Their only responsibility, or what in a religion would be called a law or an obligation, their responsibility is human rights. Or their dignity or happiness. And their objective or their purpose in life or the meaning of life is human realization. Potential. Fulfillment. And the only way they know what's a human and what's not is by self-awareness, or what's called consciousness. You see, humans are the most conscious species. So you can kill a rat. You just can't kill a human. That's the idea of their ethicality. Now this is humanism. And it's all over the world today. And in fact, you'll see it in almost every religion. And you see it in behind all educational programs. It's what motivates the United Nations. It's what motivates most political parties. It's the basic underlying philosophy. It's collective self-worship. We worship the human race. Now, there are five obstinate and ridiculous assumptions. We can call it their faith. Of humanism without God. That is, a devotion to the human race without a devotion to God. So if you're devoted to the well-being of the human race without being devoted to God, you've got 5 points of faith. Ridiculous assumptions. Number one, human excellence. That the race is excellent. That there's something magnanimous about the human race. Something special about the human race apart from God. Not that we were created in God's image, but just that somehow the human race is the greatest objective, the greatest thing in the universe. And they've only, you know, really explored a very small part of the universe, so they don't have any reason to believe we're the greatest thing. And according to, you know, the science fiction movies, we're not even close to the greatest thing. There's a whole bunch of other things out there a lot greater than us. And yet still, their underlying philosophy is the greatness of the human race. Humanity! We are the epitome! We're the highest rung on the ladder. We're the top of all the species. Somehow, the excellence of the human race. And yet they'll come out and actually believe that people are basically good. Or, if people are individually wicked, somehow, collectively, we're good. I read the Humanist Manifesto, written in 1933. It had to be rewritten in 1973. And then I read the Amsterdam Declaration of Humanism of 1952, and it had to be rewritten in 2002. And it's really quite an education when you start looking at what humanity is and what humanity thinks about themselves. But I noticed that in the 1973 Humanist Manifesto, they had 8 out of 30 or so paragraphs devoted to the survival of the human race. 8 out of 30 or so paragraphs devoted to the survival of the human race. As if, you know, that's really up in the air. We might not survive. And I asked myself, why not? What is our danger? Who's attacking us? Who are we protecting ourselves from? Aliens? Are they shooting at us from outer space? We're only talking about survival from ourselves. Survival from self-annihilation. Do you not see the ridiculous assumption that the human race is something good if we're actually in danger of destroying ourselves? Yeah. Survival of the human race is now our great priority. Just to make it. Just to keep the species alive. And I wonder, if the species is that dysfunctional, why? Why keep it alive? Let it go. Maybe accidental nature can come up with something better. It's an obstinate and ridiculous assumption, but that's the faith of humanism. That's the faith of the major religion in the world today. The religion that actually is creeping in and taking over Christianity and almost every other religion. That's the religion of communism. That's the religion of socialism. That's the religion of education. That's the religion of government. That's the religion of the United Nations. And yet how can they assume that we as a race are worth saving if corruption is everywhere and perversion is everywhere and the crime rate increases with civilization? The second faith or ridiculous assumption is human ethics. As if there is some morality apart from God. As if there is some foundation for doing the right thing. If there is no God, then there is no judgment and there is no responsibility after death. Hello! What is the reason to do right? What is the reason not to kill your neighbor? What is the reason not to steal? What's the reason to be a good person, to tell the truth? What is the basic fundamental reason for morality without God? Alternative to religion? Come on. You have to have a basis. You have to have a reason. You say, no, well, it's the realization of our potential. We're trying to reach what? What are we going for? What is our aim? There is no morality without God. There is no reason to do the right thing if you're not going to be judged for it. If after a few decades, you're going to die and rot and people are going to forget where they put you. Then why? What does it matter whether you lived good or bad? What does it matter whether you were a better person than someone else, that you never got drunk, or that you never committed adultery, or that you never, in fact, without God, without His law, without judgment afterwards, without any responsibility toward God, reason tells you to fornicate as much as you can, to commit adultery as much as you can, to kill all your competitors, to steal, to rob, to cheat, do everything you can get away with. That's what reason tells you. Now, humanists will say, no, no, no. Ethics are based upon human empathy. That is, if we see someone else suffering, we feel the same thing. We suffer too. So therefore, our ethics, our doing the right thing by other people, is based on our emotions. And yet, you can also feel sorry for a dog that gets run over. And yet we base no ethics on that. And, you know, there's all kinds of empathy. The fact is, reason alone is not enough to cause ethics or morality. And it's been proven all over the world today. You want to know what the historical results of humanism have been? This is the actual results of humanism. Socialism, communism, Nazism, fascism, World War I, World War II, and the United Nations. These are the results of humanism. And I mean directly, these people had it in their mind to improve the human race. The third ridiculous assumption or the faith of humanism is human potential. You read any of those documents of humanists, and there are hundreds of documents of humanists. In fact, right now, they're insisting humanism has 8 letters and no more. Because they're tired of all the divisions of humanism. Everybody who's a humanist needs to just be a humanist. That's what they're saying. Well, you'd be amazed at how often they mention potential and realization and what we're capable of and what we're trying to go for. But they actually believe they can solve their problems. They've never solved any problem. No humans have ever solved any real basic human problem. They've come up with a vaccine for polio, but they don't stop death. They don't stop crime. They don't stop poverty. They don't stop war. They don't stop genocide. They don't stop envy. They don't stop divorce. They don't stop abortion. They don't stop murder. They can't. And yet still they have this utopian feeling that if we just apply ourselves, we can solve our problems. And that is also a ridiculous assumption. Some problems are unsolvable. Sin and death. And then a fourth one is human destiny. As if we're reaching something, we're going somewhere, we're making something worthwhile. And these are all ridiculous statements. You see, because if there is no God, we're not going anywhere. And just like every individual dies, the race would die without God pretty soon. I mean, the dinosaurs died, right? Not without God, but still, I mean, things die all the time, even in their own philosophy. Things are just disappearing into nothing. The fact is, human destiny, that's nonsense. What do you think our destiny is? We're going to populate outer space? I mean, the closest star would take us longer than our lifespan to reach. Traveling the speed of light. We're talking about hundreds and hundreds of light years away. What are we going to... What destiny is there for humans? It's offensive to God for humans to talk like this. Why do they talk like they have some destiny without me, God would say? Why do they think that there's something they can accomplish without me? They're prisoners on earth. They say, no, we've conquered outer space. What? They went to the moon and brought back 5 pounds of rocks. And now they've conquered outer space. What are you talking about? They've done nothing. Of course it's offensive. You don't talk to God like that. What are you so fascinated with humans for? We're a bunch of losers and prisoners on earth. And the idea that there's meaning in the race, that there's no meaning in the individual? What nonsense is that? Why do I care that my race wins? Seriously, why do I care? It doesn't make any sense to me. You know that my species is winning? Woohoo! And yet in the individual, the knowledge that there is nothing, just give them that. Look, individuals, all of you individuals, our race is winning. We are advancing faster than any other species. And they will be depressed. And they'll commit suicide. And they'll be empty. And they'll try drugs. And they'll have generation gaps. And they'll perforate every part of their body because they don't know what else to do. And then, of course, the fifth and most obstinate and ridiculous assumption of humanism is that human independence. That we're thinking our own thoughts. When Jesus said from the start, Satan is the humanist. You honestly think that you had all these good ideas? You honestly think that you're coming up with this stuff? You know, humans and their extreme intelligence. You really ought to get quotations of really extremely intelligent people and find all these quotations that sometimes are really ridiculous so that you realize just how the very smartest of us are so out of it sometimes. Listen, do we honestly think we're in control of our own destiny or that we have something to do with how things happen or what happens? You know, like say, a president thinking he had something to do with prosperity in the United States? Come on. The best that a president can do is try to stay on top of the heap. That's about all he can do. I mean, you just fight to stay on top. It's not like you have any real control of anything. It's not like when the stars start falling that you've got some idea or, you know, have a movie that a comet's coming toward Earth and we're going to send somebody out there to blow it up before it hits us. That's Nonsense. You've got no control. You don't even have control over what you're thinking. You listen to too much radio and you'll find yourself thinking what they think. You listen to too much television, you'll find yourself thinking what they think. You look at pornography, you'll start thinking about that. You read the other junk, you'll start thinking about that. You don't have control over your own thoughts. Most of us never have an innovative thought in our entire life. Now that's the honest truth, most of us. I'm not saying there are no innovative thoughts out there. It's just most of us have never come close. Most of us are just repeating somebody else's garbage. The fact is, they're under strong delusions. There's principalities out there that are just throwing out these ideas and people are just following them. You know, like all these young people wanting to be independent and think their own way, so they dress like everybody else. Except their parents. They're dressing like anybody but their parents. But it's still like everybody else. I mean, if you can buy it in a store, people, it's because they're making them by the millions. If you want to dress independent, make your own clothes. So what is so offensive about humanism? Besides the fact that it just throws it in God's face. Well, one thing is the extraordinarily visible glory of God compared to humans. It's an amazing thing when you consider what God has done. And you consider the intelligence and the wisdom that it required and the effort that He put into it and the thought and the preparation and the patience, everything that He's done. And then compare it to humanity. There's a waterfall right south of Uruapan in Mexico. Two waterfalls, actually. It's where two rivers come together and join and meet. And it's a nice little waterfall, nice huge plain out there where it has a little river. And it's just gorgeous country. And the one waterfall is about a mile off the road. And you can just pull off the road and walk down to the waterfall. And it happens to be about 10 miles south of the city of Uruapan. City of about 200,000 people, maybe. And it would be so glorious. You see the water pouring out of the jungle cliffs and pouring down into this huge basin and bubbling over the rocks and going off on down into the... Just gorgeous. If it weren't for hundreds of feet tall piles of foam from human excrement that is just gathered up on all sides. Because the river goes through the city. And the sewage is dumped into the river. And right out of the city hits this waterfall and churns it all up. And brown foam, people. That's what humans do. About 2 miles farther down, there's another river. Skips the cities. Comes down, goes over the same cliffs. And joins down to the other river down below. If you're willing to walk 4 or 5 miles farther, you get to the other one called Saraquita, and it's just gorgeous. That's what God did. And over here is what people do. And there's nothing that illustrates it better. And you have to consider what God has done and then what people have done. You know what all these people who are humanists, all you know what they want? They want nature. They want to save the rainforest. Well, why? I mean, we're humanists. We want people. More people. Don't we want the human race to win? So we'll have more people and we'll just cover all those plains with concrete. Then we'll have people. Oh no, just compare what God does to what people do. And it's extraordinarily offensive, this doctrine of humanism. As if humanity is anything. Humanity is a plague to nature. And consider the glory of God in the gospel and in His doctrines compared to the religions around there. I mean, just watch what they do in religion. I was watching, they were doing something on the news the other day, and they were showing this Muslim group, Shiite Muslims, with these huge balls and chains and slapping themselves on the back, and they were bleeding. I don't know why. But that's not the gospel. That's not what the gospel teaches us. The gospel makes us like God. It lifts us up and thinks God's thoughts. And yet humanism, what people have come up with, the doctrines that people come up with, is horrible. Of course it's offensive. And God was offended at any doctrine that competes with His doctrine. He's offended by it. And then, of course, there's a basic wickedness of dismissing God in our affairs, which happens all the time. Humanists, they just want to get rid of God. They don't want to get rid of all the benefits of religion. They just want to get rid of God. But think about how extraordinarily offensive that is. God created us. He made us in His image. He gave us everything we have. He still supplies the rain that we need. He gives us the heat, He gives us the air, He gives us our food, He gives us everything. And yet, we go out of our way as a human race to avoid acknowledging Him at all. Yeah. Even coming up with ideas of how to be good without being godly. How we can be good without reading the Bible. And people all over, they want to talk to you about anything but not God. Yeah. We'll talk about anything but not God. Let's not talk about the Bible. That's boring. Let's not talk about, no, that's anything but God. Stand out there and preach on the street. You might get a couple of people to stop and listen. And that's nice. But let a clown come up over there and they're all gone. They'll go around the clown. This clown doing this, you know. Seriously? Talk about God? Somebody preach the gospel? No, forget it. We'd rather watch a white-faced clown try to get out of a box that's not there. Right? You know that's the way it is. But think about how offensive that is to God. God says, what about me? I made all this. It was my idea. God says. And you don't want to talk about me? I gave my son to die on the cross and rise again to save your soul. But you don't want to mention my name. You'll pray. You'll say God. But not Jesus. It's an amazing thing. Matthew Henry. I thought for sure. It was in his commentary on Isaiah 1. And I tried to look it up to get the exact quote. And it wasn't there. So I'm not sure now where I read it. But I know it was Matthew Henry. He said, devotion to God without good works and good works without devotion to God are equally wicked. Chew on that for a while. Devotion to God without good works. So if you're a religious hypocrite, you say, I believe in God, but you live like the devil, that's wicked. But if you live righteously and are not devoted to God, that is also wicked. And another thing that is so offensive about humanism is that it's a personal affront to God. All manner of idolatry. To refuse to give credit where credit is due is highly offensive. And then to take the credit that someone else is due is highly offensive. Humanists take credit for everything. They take credit for the scientific method. They act like humanism, you know, this non-belief in God is what caused science. Idiots. All of the sciences today that exist were founded by believers. Isaac Newton was a believer. Kepler was a believer. Pasteur was a believer. Atheists didn't invent anything. Didn't come up with any science. They take credit for democracy. All of them believers. They believed in God. Take credit for women's liberation and emancipation of the slaves. Take credit for free market economics. Take credit for everything. As if, you know, what's been in the way all of the history has been religion. And now that we've gotten rid of religion, look how we've prospered. Yeah. It's amazing how people can be so ignorant of history. Amen. There's something extraordinarily offensive about your fascination with your race. Mm-hmm. With your species. Yeah. With what you think we've accomplished. And it's going to come clear soon. Everything's going to become clear soon. You see, because this world's going to end like God said it's going to end. It's going to be a conflagration nobody's going to forget. And nobody's going to be able to escape. Watch out when God lets you have your way. Watch out when God backs off and says, okay, you don't want to give me credit for anything? Have at it. Enjoy. When he which, when that which led it is taken out of the way, then find out what happens. When the humanists take over, when God gets out of the way, and people who are interested in improving our race start taking over. Adolf Hitler wanted to improve the race. Joseph Stalin, we're going to improve the race. There's no list of worse criminals in history than humanists. And Satan is the power behind it. It's a spirit that flows all over the world trying to say, we as humans don't need God. Get God out of our thoughts. He's the problem. He's always been the problem. If we can get rid of religion and we can all get together and just by human reason and empathy and ethics and morality, we'll all be fine. When that happens, the world is going to end. It's going to destroy itself because humans aren't all they're cracked up to be. The only good thing we've got in this world is what God has given us. And the only person we owe devotion to is God. And all forms of idolatry are wicked and highly offensive to God. Whether you're praying to Mary, or whether you're praying to Mohammed, or whether you're exalting anybody else but God, whether you're refusing to give credit to God, or whether you're taking credit for something God did for you, it's highly offensive to God. Let's stand and sing number 243. We're going to sing through the whole song. If you've got something you want to do, you want to make right with God, you're welcome to come. The altar's open.